Session number 12913.
Tobello's Real Six.
I mean, played. They got such a... so bad. But they were offered no resistance. Ammunition was running out. Some guns were down to... well, nearly all guns was down sometimes to only 5 rounds a day. And when you take a Bofor, it fires 5 rounds, bang, 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 gone. That was his day's ration, and they weren't allowed to fire anymore. Planes, fighters, would come so low, you could almost shake hands with the pilots. You see, they're grinning at you, and you were helpless. They just bombed and bombed, and, well... and our men were on the airfield, and as they bombed the airfield, they were going out and filling in the holes. There was one man, he had a nickname, the Colonel. He used to drive a steamroller. And as they filled in the holes, he used to run over them and flatten it out. He thought he had the best job in the regiment, because he wasn't digging holes. And he'd be out there no matter what was on. He thought more about steamroller than he did his own life. What can you say about him? Planes would come in, and I think he just stuck his head. Then there was another funny incident.
Which airfield was it?
That would be, from Lucca, they built a strip called the Safi Strip. And that was what we had to maintain. Also there, where the planes were on the ground, they were being bombed, they decided to build some shelters for them with the bombed bricks and everything else that come out of Valletta and the other villages. They bomber bays for the aircraft. Terrific great things. Some of them about 12 foot high. And this was another part of the job the men had to do, build these bays. When I was lucky, I was a signaller. I didn't have to do any of this, only watching. They built those so that planes could come in. They also helped the RAF to refuel and put ammunition back into the fighters and everything else, where they were so short-handed. The infantry played a terrific part in Malta. I was out on a line party one day. Telephone line was knocked out. And I was walking along, and there was a plane there, one of the fighters, Hurricane. And two of the fitters were working on it, and they wanted to gun it up, give it a good do. They said to me and my mate, "Will you lay on the tail for us whilst we guns her?" They had the chocks in the front. We laid across the tail, one either side, and they gunned her. God, her legs went up. I've never had such an experience in all my life. And when they cut her, and we got off, we thanked them very much for such a pleasant experience. They thought it was a terrific joke. I found my side hat about 100 yards away. Got blown off.
So you shot up into the air?
We just curled round the tail, you see, the fin of the tail. We jackknifed round it like that. You couldn't move your legs down, and you couldn't sit up where the rush of air was so tight. You was just locked there like that until they cut the engine, and then released you, and then you could get off. But we done what they wanted. One of our chaps came in one night. He'd been with a Maltese girl, And he said, "Oh, that a lovely meal today." I said, "What was that?" He said, "Oh," he said, "I had winkles." I said, "Winkles?" "Yeah," he said, "I had a big dish of them." I said, "There's no winkles around Malta." He said, "Well, I had some." I said, "No, you didn't." I said, "What you had was snails." He said, "What do you mean, snails?" "Well," I said, "you've seen the Maltese walking around. They used to go around all the walls when things really got tight with a bit of wire and a tin, and they used to scrape the snails out of the wall, and that's what he'd had." I'll tell you what, he didn't have those snails for long once I told him what he'd had. He brought a lot up. And several of our lads went with Maltese girls. One of my platoon, a bloke by the name of Edwards, he married one. And when you used to speak to the Maltese men, if you went into one of their little bars, and beat houses, whatever they used to call them, and had a chat with them, you'd say, "How many children you got?" It was nothing for them to say, "Two by me, two by the priest." And apparently that was the custom in Malta. If you married and you didn't have a child within a certain time, you get a warning that if your wife was not expecting within a certain time, the priest would take a hand. This was fact. Now, Gary, when he got married, he got hold of the priest, the village priest. Of course, nearly every family in Malta got a priest in the family somewhere. He said, "If ever I catch you in my house," he said, "I'll break your so-and-so neck." Because with the Maltese, if a priest's cloak was in there, when they went in, they couldn't go in. Now, I went to Gozo for a bit of a rest with a company. And used to go from Malta to Gozo, and it used to be a sailing boat then. Great big sailing boat, lovely old thing. Now on the boat with us, me and my mate was talking to him, was two priests. So we started to speak to them, and they were Americans, and they were speaking and laughing, and we started to ask them about this being whether, you know, a fact or not. They said, "Because you're supposed to not have anything to do with women, are you?" And they laughed. And I said, "What about this business over here?" And one of them said, "Well," he said, "there's perks in every trade, isn't there?" So he agreed it with me. So, and I mean, we actually knew it was fact. As a matter of fact, I knew a young girl when I saw her one day, and she had a black eye. And I said, "What the blazes happened to you?" She was in one of the bars down in Valletta. She said, "The priest done this." I said, "What for?" She said, "He said I hadn't confessed enough." So he hit her. They're absolutely dominated by the church. And when I said,
Ohio.
It didn't only save us with our oil supplies. I mean, when she came in, she had her back broken, her deck was buckled, you never see anything. How she ever floated, I don't know. And she had a destroyer towed the other side of her, and they brought her in. There was another ship came in with the same convoy, and she got right around on the opposite coasts and gone through in neutral waters and got through and then shot across and got into Malta. And she had vital supplies, and that was what really broke the back. But the main thing about when the Ohio got in, up until then, we'd had no beer supplies because the factory that, or the brewery, didn't have any oil or anything to make the beer. But we knew when the siege was broken because one morning someone suddenly looked across and over by Valletta we saw smoke coming out of the brewery chimney. And that's when we knew that the siege was really broken. I was on the exchange one day when things were really bad, just before things brightened up. It had to be. We'd had Spitfires come in, and they'd been destroyed on the ground almost before they hit. But this night that they'd come in, and they managed to save them. They'd been in the air and back again. I hadn't even seen them. Malta's not a very big place, but I was on the exchange, and a signal came through. There was air raid coming up, and it said, I think it was 60 Spitfires airborne. Now, we'd had a rough time, and we weren't very happy, I can tell you. And this signal come from Battle HQ, where they're miles underground in Valletta. I said, now, don't muck us, honey, I didn't say muck us about, I said something else about, mate. I said, we're out here, I said, without you telling that, things like that, I said, there's no bloody Spitfires here. Because we'd only had Hurricanes and a few Spitfires, but they'd been shot down. One time we had nearly every Spitfire Hurricane shot down. He said, have a look out. We looked out, and there was these Spitfires taken off from Lucca. Never seen such a pretty sight in all my life. They went up into the sun. And then the Welshmen and the Manxmen, those were mineland cruisers, they'd been running in supplies, they'd been running the blockade and bringing in stuff. Up until just before then, guns were worn out. You'd get ack-ack gunfire, and a shower would explode about 100 feet up in the air. It was as much a danger to the men, to the crews, as they were to the... Well, more than to the enemy, where the barrels were worn out. But they'd got these guns, barrels in, ammunition. How they done it, God knows. These planes were there, and then Jerry started to come in. The dive bombers first. And as they came in, they put up a barrage. I've never seen one since. The air was full of little parachutes. And as they were drifting down, so they were exploding. The fighters, they was going in. Jerry, they didn't know what the hell was happening. One plane dived out to sea with a parachute. As he tried to dive out, bail out, his parachute caught in the tail. He dived out to sea. In no time at all, it was all over. Jerry, I think they shot down about 60 planes that day. And from then on, Jerry didn't have a chance. But of course, prior to that, we'd had a raid on the, just before the siege was broken, when Italian E-boats came in and attacked the Grand Harbour. They came in and they had warning there, they were there, or they picked them up on radar or something. And they opened up and they sunk every one. What the guns didn't sink, the aircraft did. But they opened up even with heavy guns. And a CO with the heavy guns got into trouble for opening up, for using his guns, because they said, boy, using everything, if there were submarines laying off, which they didn't know, they could have spotted the whole of our defences from the amount of guns that was being fired. There was only one torpedo or got through, and that didn't do much damage. There was one other thing I did forget to mention, that the ship that I came over, the Brackenshire, on one of her later trips she came in, I think it was our next trip, she got bombed and torpedoed, and she sank just off the coast in Malta. She turned turtle and there was just her part of her bottom showing. And even then, Navy divers cut a hole in her and salvaged some of her cargo. There was one other case that was rather amusing, and that was three sailors. They were down in the gut one day, and there was a raid, and the bar they was in was underground. The top of it was like a lodging house. It got a direct hit, and everything came random, except that they were in the bar. They couldn't get out. They had a light, and there they were, all the bottles, so they got stuck in. And they were down there for about 3 days before they got dug out. And when they dug out, they thought they were dead because they were all unconscious. They drunk themselves stupid. And without examining them, they just slapped them in the morgue. One of them woke up. Sits up, all he got on his underwear, and he's got a sheet over him. He rips it off, and there's bodies all round him, but he finds his mates and brings them round, and they go staggering out. There was a girl out in like a little room outside, writing details. She nearly passed out when she see three of them walking out of the morgue. But the funny part was that there was that the owner of the bar put in a claim to the Navy for all the drink they'd consumed whilst they were down there. Of course, the Navy, they gave them the right answer. This was sent as a signal to us so that we could all have a good laugh. And we did have laughs, even in Malta. But when we got eventually, when the siege was lifted, we were selected as the brigade to leave the island. Hampshire's, Devon's and Dorset's. First Hampshire, second Devon's, first Dorset's, I think it was. And we left. Navy came and got us. And we sought out the Grand Harbour. Never seen such a sight in my life. All the bastions over the harbour was crowded with civilians and soldiers and a band, I think, from the Royal West Kents. God, they cheered. The band played "Won't You Know, Come Back Again." There was the girls waving their handkerchiefs because some of them had their husbands on there, on our ships. Some of them never saw them again. And off we set. Egypt. We gets into Egypt. Of course, we have something decent to eat on the boat. One of my signalers, he got stuck in, had a few drinks, lost his teeth over the side because he was a bit sick. And when he put in a claim for him, he put him in as lost in action. Quite a joke, that was. We got into Egypt, and we were greeted like heroes. First thing, there's big baskets full up with bread outside the darning tents.
This is March 1943 we're talking
about. This is, 43. We moves. Well, we just gorged ourselves. But you couldn't eat too much because it would have made you sick. Then we get invitations from all the big businessmen, the Europeans and that, and we, lorry loads of us were taken in to Alex and places like that, and we went into big halls with tables right down through the middle, absolutely crammed with every possible thing that you could eat. I don't know what they thought we were, but you just couldn't eat it. And I'd say they showed their appreciation over there. But of course the local Arabs, or Egyptians, they weren't quite so, some of them weren't quite so appreciative. They used to raid the camps at night to see what they could steal. And we used to have pickets that used to roam the camps to stop them. And you had orders to shoot any dog you saw because the Arabs would have dogs and they'd send a dog into a tent. If the dog stayed asleep, they knew that everybody stayed in. They knew that everyone was asleep. Then they would then go in and they could help themselves. If a dog came running out, they knew someone was awake. Now our QM, a really old soldier from the First World War, A.B. Stone, Captain Quartermaster, he was telling everybody about what would happen if we lost any gear, any kit. He had his tent slightly set apart from others. Woke up one morning, there was his bed, him in it, everything else gone, tent and all. All he was doing was laying on his bed. They'd taken the lot. See, he didn't say anything else after that. After we'd more or less re-equipped, we went on to near the pyramids. What was it called?
Sidi Bish? Kibrit.
And there we started to prepare for the invasion of Sicily. We had a special squad came out from England to train us. They had a landing craft assault built on the sand. It was a real Heath Robinson thing, but you had your three benches exactly the same as it would be on a landing craft, one either side, one through the middle, and there we trained for the invasion of Sicily. And the strange thing was that we trained by numbers. This team would take out a platoon of men, And everything they did was done by numbers. And carry flags. You would look like a lot of robots going over the sand. As an example, if you were assaulting a pillbox, you'd have one line of your men, the riflemen, lined up in front. You'd send your machine gunners to the right, and they would march, stop, put up a flag, say they were firing. You would then advance, and then they would take the flag down to say they weren't firing. You would then go straight through and go to the rear. All, everything done like a load of robots. I've done some training in the army, but never anything like that. Of course, then we had our own real training without them. And one of the things we used to do was do a mobility march before breakfast. We used to run and walk from Kibrit to the pyramids, fully armed and equipped. Stack your rifles and climb the Grand Pyramid. Straight up to the top. That was quite an experience. The top of the pyramid is flat because they took some off to build a mosque in Cairo. And the top of that is just one massive signature as well. Different ones have scrawled in there. There was even the Prince of Wales that scrawled his signature on there, Duke of Windsor. And from the top of there, from the top of that pyramid, fantastic view. You could look down on the Sphinx, which had a big bank of sandbags underneath it to hold its head up. Apparently Napoleon had used it for firing practice. Then there was a temple. And if you look towards Cairo and then to the right, as far as you could see was pyramids, various sizes, hundreds of them, or appear to be. After you'd had a little break, you came down, picked up your rifles, back to camp for breakfast. You'd come an easy way and go back a rough way, and the rough way was just like a moonscape, all rotten, crumbling, well, rock. If you put your foot wrong, that was it. Then we went inside the pyramid, and, well, we had a pretty good time there. But we had one chap there.